Day 179 of war in Gaza. Pressure is mounting on Israel after 7 aid workers were killed in an Israeli airstrike earlier this week. Their bodies have been removed from the bombarded coastal strip today. The United Nations says the incident was inevitable given the conduct of the war. The US wants a comprehensive investigation for the findings to be made public and those responsible held accountable. Israel says the attack was a grave mistake and has promised a full investigation. Jamie McGoldricks is United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for Palestine. He's been telling me about his latest visit to Gaza.
Well, last time I was in Gaza, I went north through the Kuwaiti Junction, which has been the spot where a lot of ransacking of trucks have taken place, and a lot of killings have taken place because of insecurity there. And then I went from there into Beit Jala and Jabalia. And when I was in that part, I saw, I mean, obviously the scale of destruction is like it's an industrial level. It's so massive. It's about something like of a dystopian movie. Then I went into the reason for going to the north is actually to go to Kamal Adwan Hospital, which is the hospital that's been reporting over the last couple of weeks the deaths of children through malnutrition. And we know from the famine committee reports that the actual levels of malnutrition have deteriorated significantly since the last time they were measured back in December. And I saw myself in the hospital in the children's ward, everybody on the beds there, all the kids and all the mothers were there, desperate. And they're sort of quite skeletal, very thin, emaciated, and with complications of health, like, you know, stomach infections, diarrheal, and some of them with hepatitis A. All of that sort of undermining their sort of nutritional status, their immune status, and causing real problems health-wise. And so much so, some of them actually end up dying, as we heard from Dr. Usman the day before, one of the children had died. So it's a full range of kids from the age of 2 through to about the age of 8 or 9, and they're all in very, very bad state. Some with very serious complications like cystic fibrosis, and some with, there's one child there with brain cancer. So it's a tragic, tragic situation.
The distribution of aid, talk to me about how difficult it is to get aid around the Gaza Strip and also about the scale coming in now.
Well, the scale has always been problematic. We're getting more stuff coming in recently because of sort of some changes that have taken place. But we only have one entry point for supplies. That's Kerem Shalom in the Israeli side, and it comes through to the Rafah and the Gaza side. And then we have to offload, unload. There's like three movements of unloading, loading trucks. We can't go straight in. That takes up time. And as we're waiting to load and unload, there's insecurity because there are crowds around who are trying to take from the back of these trucks. And then we finally get outside. And what you've got there is, because of the desperation, you get law and order issues, you get sort of security vacuum. We used to use police before, but they've been prevented to by Israel, who see them as a threat and see them as Hamas, so we don't use them anymore. So you have that insecurity caused by desperation. And because we're not getting enough trucks out there, we can't calm things down. So moving around in very congested areas because of the crowds and because of vehicles and horse and carts, donkeys, it makes it very, very difficult and easy then to stop a truck and take off the back of it. Because of that, you've got sort of groups who are probably, you know, organized in such a way that they actually take stuff off the back of that, whether they're Hamas or whether they're just, you know, gangs who are just trying to make some money in the black market. But certainly a large quantity of those people are desperate, and that's why they're ransacking, looting the trucks. Going north is even more complicated because you've only got three roads going north, and two of the roads are never working because of security and ongoing military operations. So we go north. And then when you go north as well, because of the desperation is even greater there, because the supplies to the north have been even less than we have in the south. The desperation levels are there, the anger's there, and so it's a really insecure environment. So all of that makes it very, very difficult. And then for us to get to the end use, to get to enough people to turn around this really looming famine that's there in the north, especially, but in other parts as well, is a real challenge. And we're hoping that we can get more entry points, more roads, the three roads opened up continually, and an ongoing fluid movement of trucks and convoys of food and other material into different parts. And it's a real challenge.
When I was talking to you recently, and I was asking you about your relationship with Israeli officials when you're there, you were pragmatic. You said that, you know, you have a job to do, as do they. How has that relationship changed, do you think, after what happened to World Central Kitchen last week?
Well, I think what we've always been saying is that we've been sort of warning them that, you know, the situation we have in terms of the humanitarian notification system and this idea of deconflicting our movements in areas where there's hostilities, that doesn't work. I mean, what's happening is the people behind that and the system itself are not probably, shall we say, as focused as they should be. And as a result of that, we get things like that incident yesterday. But there's been many incidents of trucks getting hit, cars getting hit, buildings getting hit, houses getting hit. So it's not something that this is the most tragic, obviously, because of the death of seven people in an airstrike of airstrikes of that kind. But it's not something that we haven't been warning them about, that we have to get that system better and get it improved. I think they've recognised that now, and it's taken this incident to do that. I think they're now having a very frank conversation about how they view us, not as maybe as the enemy or as a threat, but then to basically understand why we work the way we work. And we have to have a different conversation, not just with the Israeli authorities, but more importantly with the Israeli military, who we find it difficult to access. And I don't think they fully understand what we do. And I think because of that is a lack of trust. And we have to find a way of changing that conversation if we're going to have a more sort of expansive humanitarian response into Gaza, which is in a desperate need of it right now.
What are you expecting when you go back in tomorrow?
Well, I expect the situation to be the same. I expect the numbers to be the same. We expect the chaos to be there, you know, the congestion, the fact that people living in very fragile, squalid conditions, both inside the town of Rafah itself, but also on the coastal area with these makeshift shelters and tents. At a time when the temperature are rising to about 25 degrees, lack of water, a lack of health services and limited supply of food, it doesn't make for a good cocktail of humanitarian response, but that's where we are. And we've only got sort of 2 or 3 days response available at any point in time to move to help these people. So we're very concerned about what's coming up next. And I think there's going to be real water shortage problems. And that may add to the already ongoing health issues that are there.
That's Jamie McGoldrick's United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for Palestine.